I'm Steve Martin. Welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass. Our guest today, Tim Stafford of Blue Highway. They have a brand new album, Lonesome State of Mind, which is on the Down the Road label. We're going to start off with a tune that you know by now, if you listen to the program, that artists, recording artists, get to select tunes that they want me to play in a certain order. And I'm thrilled with Tim's choices. We're going to start off this portion of the program with Lonesome State of Mind, which is the title cut from the brand new Blue Highway. Then we'll get into our talk with Tim Stafford. By the way, the second portion of the discussion with Tim, I'll introduce this when we get to it, but just so you know, this is a live radio program. You're listening to a recording of it, but I'm sitting in a studio with a microphone, and I play the songs, and there's nothing sent over a computer to me to do intros and outros. There's nothing wrong with that. I just want to let you know that this is a live program. You'll find that out in the second portion of my discussion with Tim, because a very funny thing happens, and it wasn't until after we were finished talking, as all recorded live, that I figured out what the problem was. Kind of an interesting mystery. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. This is Lonesome State of Mind from Blue Highway. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great tune, Lonesome State of Mind, which happens to be the title cut from a brand new album by Blue Highway. I'm really happy to have a frequent contributor to Unreal Bluegrass on the phone right now, Tim Stafford. How are you, Tim?
Doing well, Steve. How about you?
I'm doing fine, doing just fine. So much going on. I know that we were talking about this album at length or until we're finished talking about it, but I noticed from different social media that you're now at Eastern Tennessee State University, and tell me what that's involved, and we'll get into the album. I think that's important.
Yeah, ETSU has a bluegrass program that they have since 1982, and it's actually a bluegrass old-time and roots music studies program within the Appalachian Studies Department. And they started several initiatives. The thing has really grown. It's the largest of its kind in the world. And a lot of students and a lot of great students. And they decided to start a thing called the Artist in Residence. And it's a year appointment. And it's kind of like a regular faculty position, and it's available to be renewed for a year. So I was there this past year, and I'm going to be there this coming year as the artist in residence, starting in fall of 2024. And I've really enjoyed it. It's just been a whole lot of fun with these students, especially since I'm doing a lot of songwriting with them. And we have some songwriting seminars, and it's turned out really, really well.
So if you're a student at Eastern Tennessee State University in this program, you get an opportunity maybe to interact with Tim and songwriting. That would be great because Tim is such a great songwriter. He's been on the program. You've been on Unreal Bluegrass 7 times, man.
It's been a lot, Steve, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you being involved and and so accessible to the listeners. But one of the things I've learned about Tim is not just that he's a great guitar player, he's done solo projects, and not just that he's a member of Blue Highway, which really has to be a cliche here, the Cadillac of bluegrass bands with the quality. You can't not be great. This band cannot not be great, double negative. But I've also learned a lot about Tim's songwriting, and it's so powerful, and it's something that's always consuming you, and you're always taking notes. And so I think for a student to be there, to be able to interact with Tim Stafford on songwriting or whatever, I think is a great opportunity. I hope everybody takes advantage of it that can.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's just been so much fun for me, and it seems like the students are getting a lot out of it because it's a sort of intensive thing, but we end up writing a lot of songs. And over the course of the semester, we'll write like 6 or 7 songs. And so they're getting a lot out of it when they come out of on the other side. And it's not just a dry lecture type thing. It's we learn by doing, especially in a field like songwriting, because there's no correct way to do it, really. So you have to give them tips for what you think about the craft. But they take it from there. It's really, they get out of it what they put into it. And it's one of the coolest things I've ever been involved in. So hopefully they're talking about a way maybe to expand it after next year. So we'll see what happens there.
Do you think, Tim, that when the students go through this, can you see that a light has kind of come on in some of their minds about how you approach the songwriting process?
Maybe, yeah, I've definitely seen that. I've seen the light come on in their eyes when they get it for themselves,
yeah,
too,
yeah.
Which is a really cool part of it. You know, they just get this thing that wasn't there before, this song that they've come up with, and they say, oh, and you can see it, you know, and
that would
one
be
of the coolest things
cool
imaginable.
Thing. Oh, that would be so cool to be on both ends, your end and their end. It's like, okay, that's kind of the concept. That's the concept. Again, not how to write the words or how to, but the concept of the approach and the going forward and doing it. I would think, too, that you tell them that writing is a kind of like a full-time. Would you encourage them to keep writing songs and keep writing things because isn't that going to be the best way for them?
Yeah, I mean, most of them, I think, are in it for the long run, but some of them it's just an auxiliary to what they do, just one thing, and they want to improve their grasp of it, which is fine. A lot of these people want to be professional artists, and some of them want to be involved in other parts of the music field, like business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of different people here, a lot of different personalities. And some of them are interested in old-time music, some roots music, not necessarily bluegrass, although the majority of our students are bluegrass players. But,
go ahead. I'm glad we're
here.
Go ahead.
There's some great students in this department. It's kind of crazy.
Do you ever once in a while you think, that person might be chipping at my heels? You know, they might be knocking mine over.
I've got a few students that I tend to think that I'm going to see their name either up in lights or I'm going to hear a lot more about
I
think all of us will.
Yeah, that's a better way. I appreciate you talking about this program at East Tennessee State. I initially got you on the phone, and we're still going to talk about the new Blue Highway album, Lonesome State of Mind, which has I've got six songs, Tim, talking about songwriting that you either wrote or co-wrote. On this album, and this is me looking through it, counting them up. So I did want to talk about your songwriting. We opened up with the title cut, Lonesome State of Mind. There are so many great tunes. There's 12. There's two instrumentals, which I'm always thrilled when there's, especially when there's a banjo tune, especially when it's by about Bill Emerson, which is just one of my absolute banjo heroes, the fifth cut. And I'm so glad that Jason did that and put it on the album, because anybody that's ever tried to play a banjo, you recognize that Bill Emerson has this incredibly clear, distinct sound that is so perfect, you're first sort of a little bit thinking, oh, that doesn't sound, but to get it absolutely perfect the way Bill, and he wrote so many great tunes, that I'm just telling Jason I'm happy that they put this instrumental on there called Emerson, because Bill was just an absolute wonderful guy and a great, great banjo player.
Yeah, me. I feel the same way, Steve. I'm a huge Bill Emerson fan, and I still go back and listen to that early stuff with the Country Gentleman, man. I'm thinking,
oh yeah,
how good is this stuff? You know, it's just so powerful and clear and
clean, and it's just like driving down a straight track, but it also has this poetic sense to it, to where you do think, as someone in my area of playing a banjo, that I think, I could do that. Well, but so precise. It's so precise.
He's one of those guys, too, that just ends up on rewind all the time.
Yeah.
I hear his break on Little Bessie, and I've got to go back and hear it again. You know? There's just so many things that he was crucially important in that band, you know,
and
Country Gentlemen.
And that early,
other stuff too,
early stories that he's been on this program had been several times. In the early stories about traveling on the road as a bluegrass banjo player in the band was just amazing. It's like he remembers the day that right guard was invented. that was a big day for Bill. But I just thought, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You're crowded. Yeah, this is great, man. We can put this right guard on. And he's the one that stopped the car, put a tape recorder up to the radio, and recorded Shoot.
Fox on the Run.
Yeah. He recorded it, Man for Man's version, and made it and thought it would make a good bluegrass tune. Well, I think he was right on that.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't realize until I talked to him about that very same thing, and he said, well, if you go back and listen to the original, it's got that same intro. And it sure does, you know. And so, yeah, he took a lot of the arrangement from the Man for Man arrangement. So, you know, just for that one song alone, he deserves a lot of credit.
Oh,
bluegrass. But, man, what a banjo player.
He was such a cool guy. And every time I met him, well, Sonny told me this before I met. Sonny said, you're going to meet Bill Emerson. And have you ever seen him? And I said, no. He said, he's dressed to the nines. You know, he had that military thing, and he always showed up, and everything was crisp and clean and sharp as a tack. Got to meet him several times, became a friend of Bill's. But, yeah, that's just cool. And maybe I'm spending too much time on that song, but Bill Emerson, 2021, we had a devastating year. I think it was Bill and then Sonny and then J.D. Within 6 or 7 months, we lost all of those innovators before you even knew what was happening. It just was over with, so.
Bad year for banjo players.
Terrible year for music and banjo. So we're talking about this album, which is on the Down the Road label. There are the 12 cuts. We have already talked about Lonesome State of Mind. We entered with that, but that tune has a different history than some of the other ones. Tell me a little bit about Lonesome State of Mind, which was the tune that we opened with.
And that's a tune that Bobby Starnes and I wrote. Bobby had the idea, and when he brought it to me, I said, well, I'm sure somebody's written that. And so first thing I do when I think that, any of the writers think that if you're doing a co-writing situation, is you look up and see if somebody has written it, you know. And we couldn't find any examples of a bluegrass song, especially by that name. And I thought, well, that's a really good title. And so we worked from that point of view, and we're able to come up with this this tune. And it's one of those, people talk about bluegrass being a lonesome state of mind. You know, Daniel Mullins did that quite a bit in the liner notes, and you know, he's right. Lonesome is right at the heart of the music, and has been ever since Bill Monroe started it. So it is part of this record too. There's other ways you can look at how Lonesome fits into the other songs that we've got on the record, you know. So, yeah, it's not meant to be a theme, but there are enough examples of that on the record that I guess you could say it is a theme.
A little bit. I mean, you know, Lonesome is it's not pitiful. It's a lonesome feeling, but it's not like a, well, you know, pitiful me type of deal. Maybe the Why Did I Wait So Long, which we'll get to in a minute, is like I should have made this step a long time ago, and not in a pitiful sense, but yeah, I think Lonesome is always there. Somebody's always got something to say about being alone. This is an interesting song to me. Well, they all are. But On the Roof of the World, I've read what you based that on. Here's something, before we get there, let me digress one more time. You've got Tim's voice, you've got Sean Lane's voice, you've got Wayne Taylor. You can write songs for almost any type of song, a singer. Because the voices are so strong and they can be supported by instrumentals or harmonies, the vocal abilities that Blue Highway has, you must sometimes just write a song and think, this is for that voice.
And definitely it happens. Wayne Taylor is the guy that I think of a lot, you know, when I write these songs. And there's, what, 3 or 4 examples on here, on this record, of songs that wrote or co-wrote and that Wayne ended up singing. And I don't know, I just always love the guy's voice. I think he's one of the best singers, most underrated singers out there. And it's totally natural to that guy. He just closes his eyes. If you see him on stage, man, it's like he's entering another state or something. But he's always dead on pitch, and I don't know, man. He has got it going on when it comes
I also haven't heard a key where he really has to strain to meet.
No, he's got a great range, and actually he sings tenor to Sean on a lot of the songs that Sean writes.
Yeah.
He does that on this album, on Just Like Today and Why Did I Wait So Long and a few other tunes. So, and you know, Sean's one of the best tenor singers out there.
Strong.
You know?
It's all strong vocals. That's the thing, is the band writes great, the great musicianship, but the vocals and the songs that are out there available for individual singers within them, I mean, it's powerful. Yeah, Sean, powerful. Wayne, unbelievable. And you have a great voice. You have a very recognizable voice and a good, strong voice.
I kind of consider myself a third-string singer, which is fine with me.
Well, with Wayne and Alan, I said, that's fine, yeah.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I was the second-string singer in Allison's group, but that's because nobody else really sang that much at that point. And this was the early 90s when I was in Union Station. So,
I saw that band.
Yeah, and she always wanted, a male singer to do a lot of the bluegrass-oriented material. And band sort of took that role up after I left and still carries it on, you know.
So the song that I was got diverted from, my own fault, was On the Roof of the World, and I read a little bit about your writing of the song, and I just think, The Roof of the World, I get it, it's probably Everest or somewhere over in that part of the world. The song isn't really so much about that as a guy who maybe is trying to get there, but he's talking about a different mountain.
Well, actually, the story came after the melody. I had the melody, and I didn't want to mess up this melody because I thought it was a really strong melody. And I had thought of it one day, and I recorded it. That's the way I do. I keep a melody bank. And I had this melody, and I thought, well, that gum, what would fit that? And I happened to be reading a thing on my phone on Nat Geo, with the National Geographic website. And it was about Tibet, which is called the Roof of the World. And it's the highest plain in the world, you know. And there was some things in there that ended up in the song, like herding the sheep across the frozen lake. And that really happens in this one particular part of Tibet. They have a lot of frozen lakes there that they do that on. And they also mentioned that there were some Sherpas, people who helped mountain climbers from Tibet. Most of them are from Nepal, and those are the ones you hear about because they help the climbers that go up on Everest. But I thought, well, what if there's one from Tibet and he misses his home? And he's actually helping climbers go up Mount Everest. And that is what I'm talking about in there, because I say the grandmother goddess of the world.
Well,
is
right.
That's what the Tibetans call Everest.
Okay, I didn't catch that meaning. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, it mentions the step, which is a certain point in the climb up Mount Everest on the route that most people take. And they made it to the step, but they got caught in a storm, and of course most people that do that don't make it down, so their teardrops froze as they wept, so he never made it off the mountain and back to his home, but he's lonesome for his home, just like bluegrass people are about their home in the South, their little cabin home or whatever, you know.
Do you this is recently there was news of a Sherpa, his name was Kami Rita Sherpa, who had completed his 30th ascent to Everest.
I saw that.
Did you see that? And he had done two. That was the one they reported on the 30th. That was the second one in the last 10 days. And he's 50 years old. And I'm thinking, man, oh man, this guy, goes up by himself. He goes up by himself and comes back down. It's like, there you go.
Will never be broken, except by maybe another Sherpa.
Another Sherpa who starts now. But I thought, I listened to the song and I thought, man, that just happened with this guy that made it up and came back down again. I thought, that's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. I hope he makes it off. Not like the guy in the song.
Yeah, I do too. So many people I guess they're vacationing. I guess it's like a sport, and they get stuck up. They just did recently, and I just think, man, that's a rough way to. I just soon go to a beach or a pool somewhere in a hotel, you know, where they call the dead zone, where at some point your body's dying, just to get to the part where you can. And I'm thinking, I don't need that. I don't need that. But
No, me neither.
Hey, listen, you wrote another song with Tom Utes is a co-writer with you often. And I know I've had you on to talk about Tom, and Tom's been on here lots of time. But the song Soil and Soul is the seventh cut. And that's one that I was really interested in. And because of the beat and the rhythm, I feel like there's this Native sound going through. And I mean that by Indigenous American or Native American, whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of got that feel to it. You know, I think that Tom actually had been reading a book, Soul and Soul, and then that's where that came from.
Okay.
And so, yeah, he actually had that that phrase from that, because what the book is about is a little different than this, but there are some things in it. I think it's Alistair MacIntosh wrote this song. He's a Scottish writer. He wrote this book, sorry. So, you know, I hadn't read the book, so I had to kind of, we sort of were able to come up with a theme that's more about death, you know, soul and soul. Mm-hmm. And of course, that makes it more bluegrass, but it's got that modal feel to it, you know, that
yeah.
Makes it sound really old, and I love that type of thing.
Well, when you said that Tom Youth was reading a book, I was shocked. He's always reading history. He's always reading something and turning it into
always.
Whatever his part is. And you know that because you know him well. But I think, man, oh, man, Tom Youth never stops writing great, historically significant tunes. And I'm just always amazed when I get a chance to meet him and talk to him. It's just incredible. That's a good one. How about, why don't we go to the Randall Hayes tune? So that has a death in it. But it's kind of, well, you talk about Randall Hayes, that tune, that was you and Rick Lang, who's been a guest here many times, a wonderful songwriter, from a suggestion about Randall Hayes, and his funeral just wasn't quite right. It was a little too shallow, I think it's a little too shallow. I think that's an insult to the dead person, truthfully.
Yeah. Well, Randall is based on a real person, and it's somebody that Rick knew growing up in New Hampshire, and his brother knew this guy who ended up killing that guy, and it was a real big deal in a small town in southern New Hampshire years and years ago, and so it's sort of part of the folklore up there. So we renamed him and took a lot of things about him that Rick remembered, and then added a few other things in, but essentially it's a true story. And so the thing to do is to come up with the best melody to sort of highlight the tragic nature of the whole circumstance. So that's where I came in. We just sort of put the story down the way that Rick remembered it. And yeah, that's a pretty dark song.
It's pretty dark. I want you to introduce, we planned this to introduce Northside, the second cut on the album with Sean Lane, and has his son Grayson Lane. I want you to talk about the song, but then also about this entering into the as a guest on the album, Sean's son.
Yeah, I love Sean's songwriting. I think he's easily one of the best songwriters out there in bluegrass music, and that works in this style of music. And his sons have become great songwriters too. In fact, that's what they do. They work for a publishing company in Nashville. And, you know, we were getting together to think about what songs to put on this record when we decided we wanted to make a record. And this was one of the first ones we recorded, along with Lonesome State of Mind and a few others, on the Roof of the World. And we were thinking of singles, and I thought this would make a great single. It's a really cool song, and it's from something that Sean's brother Chad, who's co-written other songs with Sean, you know, like I'm thinking of the one on our Wind of the West record, Between the Rows. That's one that they wrote together. That's a great song, and I think Gerald Ellenberg helped Sean and Chad on this, but it was from something that Chad said. He said, you know, the North Side, that's where everything melts last. You know, that's where it's hard to grow stuff. You know, he talked about it's the last place it's going to leave, you know, the snow. And Sean said, well, that's a song, you know, and they started it and finished it. When we got to record it, we had it all done as a solo for Sean. And then I think I had the idea to get his son Grayson, who wasn't born, obviously, when the band started. And he came and, well, he did it at his home studio, I think, down there. And, man, that cat, now I say Sean's one of the best tenor singers in the history of bluegrass. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I agree with you.
But Chad is, Grayson Lane, Sean's son, is one of the, he's Sean says I can't even hold a candle to that cat.
That's saying a lot.
And it's pretty amazing how much he can make his voice move and how high he can get and just the quality of his voice. They sound so good together, you know. And it was so good that when I sent it to Ken Irwin, he said, well, this is great, except Grayson's not loud enough. So he made us remix it. And I think we remixed it like more than once. I could still use more tenor.
More cowbell.
So it's pretty loud on there. But
all right.
It's just a really cool, lonesome song.
It is.
And,
well, all right, that's a good intro, Tim. Talking to Tim Stafford about the new Lonesome State of Mind album from Blue Highway. Just did a nice intro to the song we're going to play next, which is Northside. So let's play that, and I'll come right back, and I'll finish up with Tim and let him be on his way. You all listen to Northside. That's Northside from the new Blue Highway album. I mentioned at the top of this hour, and I want to remind you that this is a show that you're listening to is recorded live. The interviews are recorded live, and they're put into a show for you to listen to. Editing is just for, you know, if I drop a mic or bump into something, but it's just pretty much exactly what you hear is what I've heard. In this second portion of my discussion with Tim Stafford, something happens to prove that point. Part of the way through, if you listen really carefully, you got to really be careful and listen. Tell the dogs to be quiet. Tell the cats to be quiet. You will hear The Lion King, the soundtrack from The Lion King. And I even said something about it to Tim, and he couldn't hear it on his, and it was such a mystery. And the whole thing, I'm hearing The Lion King. And it comes up because somewhere in the middle of our discussion, Tim says Circle of Life, and then I say like The Lion King, and I start hearing music. And I'm thinking I've either lost my mind or something else is interfering here. It wasn't until that I finished the interview that I realized that over in the corner of the room where I record this program, in the recording studio, as I will call it, I have an Alexa program. I have an Alexa, and it heard me say Lion King and decided to start playing Lion King. I left it in. It's not really obtrusive. It's just, to me, hysterical. So this is part two of our discussion with Tim Stafford. Wonderful guest, as always. Thank you so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. Hakuna Matata, I guess I would say, for the second portion.
Unreal Bluegrass, coming to you from the Gold Tone Music Group studio.
That was it. That was Northside. Thanks, Tim, for such a great setup for that. Now we can all look for Grayson Lane to wind up in all sorts of recordings. How old is he then?
I think he is, let's see, 23 or 24, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was born like 6 or 7 years after the band started, so, incredible. Or maybe 5, I can't remember, because we're celebrating our 30th year.
I was going to mention that, too. It doesn't seem like it to me. I can't imagine how it seems to you, but to me it's like, wait a minute, 30 years for a Blue Highway. Okay, yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. You're always
it's
around.
Kind of a surprise. Think about it.
It can't be a surprise if you recognize that 29 was last year and 30 is, but still, I think when you say the number out loud, you're thinking, nah, that can't be right.
That's sort of crazy, man. And we always say on stage, you know, our double player, Gary Holtman, he's the same age as the band, so he's turning 30 this year, too.
Okay.
So. That makes us feel pretty weird. He just had a baby, too. He's got a brand-new baby boy. So.
You know, on and on. It's a big circle of life if we wanted to borrow from a Lion's King. Bull Moose, since we're talking about Sean, instrumental. Bull Moose is the instrumental that Sean contributes. And we talk about his great singing, but he's a great musician.
He really is, yeah. His mandolin playing has always been good, but it's just gotten more and more interesting and exacting, and you know, I don't know. He's one of the all-time best mandolin players too. He's grown into that role, and he's a hero to people like Sierra Hull, you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that she used to get up and play with us. Speaking of being old, she did, and Sarah Jarosz did too. They would get up and play with us, and a lot of other younger people as you come along. So I know he's got a pretty high regard there in the mandolin world, and for good reason. And this is just one he wrote this song, Bull Moose, years ago. And I don't know exactly how long, but it's been around for a while. So he said, hey, let's pull this out and put this
on the record. Hey, Tim, listen for a second to your background. I don't think it's me, but for a minute, I think I heard Lion King. I hear something else now, too. What am I hearing behind you?
You're hearing the Lion King? Really?
I thought I heard something. I thought right after I started talking about the Lion King, the music came on. It's very faint.
No, that's bizarre.
It is bizarre. We won't talk about
that. I was thinking it in my head, you know.
You can't let that stuff out. By the way, I got a new banjo recently, and I won't say the number that I have out loud because I'm afraid somehow it'll travel to my wife's mind. She doesn't really know, but you know, you can't even think the word. You can't even think the number because it'll get out there in the ether. So maybe that's what happened to us.
I don't know. That's what it was. Yeah.
I'm sorry to take you. So many road trips I take, but I like to have fun with the people that I like. We've talked about the album a lot. It's on a website. I'm gonna have you introduce one more song. I don't want to keep you forever, but I'll have you introduce one more song. But there's a website for Blue Highway where I assume the album can be had.
Yes.
Okay.
We've got physical copies of it, and, of course, it's available on all the streaming platforms as well. And that's one thing about it now, you know, with – there are still people in our world that like physical product, and that's cool. And we sell them at shows, and we sell them on our website. So, yeah, it's available there for sure.
Tim, I still have a CD player in my car.
Hey, man, I do too, you know.
I do too. I have a very old car, and the reason I won't get rid of it is it still runs great, and it has a 6-CD changer in it. And that's when I'm traveling around, I'm listening to music by Blue Highway and people like that at my
community. And that's six style. That's the way to go.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah. You can't get those anymore. All right. Let's slide into one more tune. Tim, I appreciate your time. Why don't we have you introduce Why Did I Wait So Long? We talked about that a little bit. Is that something that you'd like to introduce or a different one?
Well, I think we said I've had enough Missouri for a while.
Oh, right, do that. Yeah, let's do that. That's Tim and Tom Utes. Let's talk about I've had enough of Missouri for a while. I'll let you do the intro to that, then I'll let you go.
Sure, man. My wife and I had been out to Missouri. We planned this big trip around some shows that Blue Highway had in Branson and a couple other places. And there's also this she's a quilter. Makes these incredible quilts, and there's a place called Missouri Star Quilt Company. It's one of the biggest quilt companies in the world out in Hamilton, Missouri. So we went out early, flew into Kansas City, and it's in far northwestern Missouri. It's up in that area. And so we went over there, and then we went down to Branson by Arkansas, and then we went back up to another place near the middle, near Columbia. And after about 4 days, I said, "Are you enjoying your trip?" I asked my wife, and she said, "Well, I've kind of had enough Missouri for a while." and no disrespect to the state at all. It's like she was ready to come home, is what she meant.
Right.
And so I wrote that down. I wrote that line down. And then Tom Utes and I started writing over the pandemic. We wrote, I don't know, over 100 songs during the pandemic. And this was one of the ones that I mentioned this, and I thought, well, how are we going to do this? And so it ended up being a tale about a guy who he can't be at home anywhere. As soon as you know people like this, as soon as he's there for just a little while, he's ready to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just Missouri. We mentioned Montana. We mentioned Paducah, Kentucky, which ironically is also another big quilting center.
That's huge. That's huge down there.
Yeah, it is. And so he just he says in the bridge, you know, I ain't saying there's nothing wrong or right with me. I know what the problem is, and it ain't geography, you know. But I always loved, I did like the way this melody turned out, and I wanted to hear Wayne singing it and some harmony on it. So I think it was a good choice for a slower number here towards the top of the records.
Yeah. All right. Cool. That's the intro. That's the intro that we wanted for I've Had Enough Missouri for a While, and that's the the fourth cut on the brand new Blue Highway album, Lonesome State of Mind. And Tim, I appreciate you so much, and always thank you for answering some of my off the wall questions. I just have curiosities about things, and you always have good answers, and treat my questions like they make sense to everybody, even though they don't.
They do. That's because they do, Steve.
Okay, I appreciate it.
You do a great job, and I'm always ready to do anything with you related to your show, because I think it's one of the best.
I appreciate that. Are you going to be in Raleigh this year?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'll be there.
I'm gonna try to come down. I'm not on the board anymore, but I think I want to be there for the last hurrah.
Yeah, I'm actually on the board. I won't be by September. It's going to be my last time on the board of directors, but because this is my fourth time on the board of directors.
Jeez.
So it's ready for new blood, but yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. If I can convince myself to go, and I think that I'm leaning that way because people keep asking if I'm going, I'm going to go and just roam around, which is what I like to do. So, all right, thanks, Tim. Take care of yourself, man. Hopefully I'll see you in Raleigh, if not before then, okay?
Hope so, Steve. Thanks so much again, man.
Take care, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.